story now about how the average American expectations for health and life has eluded the people of Sandtown Winchester, the neighborhood in Baltimore. It's known for one of its most successful residents, Thurgood Marshall, the first African-American Supreme Court justice, but it was also home to 25-year-old Freddie Gray, who was fatally injured while in police custody last April. And the protests that followed landed a spotlight on what remains one of the nation's most segregated and poverty-stricken neighborhoods within sight of two of the nation's most prestigious hospitals. It is normal for residents of Sandtown Winchester to die a decade earlier than other Americans. There's a life expectancy here on par with that of the impoverished and the imprisoned population of North Korea. The people of this Baltimore neighborhood are imprisoned by their frightening averages and unwilling to tolerate the expectations of normal anymore. Jay Hancock is a reporter with Kaiser Health News. He says there are unprecedented efforts underway now in Baltimore to bridge this medical divide by saving money and changing the entire culture. Jay, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hi, John. Nice to be here.
How do you address something like this where the hospitals are there, but the impulse to go to them and the institutional outreach is not working?
You really have to address it in a holistic, comprehensive way. It's a, you alluded to it. The problem has been there for decades. The hospitals know they need to do something. They see the disparities in these neighborhoods that are, you know, literally within walking distance of their lobbies. And there's efforts are moving forward on you know, multiple prongs. I guess we could start at the top and look at Maryland's payment system. Maryland has the most tightly regulated hospital industry in the country. Hospitals are actually their prices are regulated, sort of like an electric utility. And Maryland has done something that probably hasn't gotten enough attention nationally. They overhauled their payment system a couple years ago, and hospitals are now paid for they're given an annual budget and basically given charge of certain populations and told that you have to, you know, take care of these people, whether they're in the hospital or out of the hospital. You're going to get paid no matter what, and you need to keep them healthy. And the upshot is that hospitals are actually being incentivized to keep people out of the hospital, which is actually what the health system needs nationwide. And this is giving incentives for the hospitals near Sandtown to pay attention to people before they arrive in the emergency room or after they're discharged from the hospital. So they're taking steps to put community – to put caregivers in the community. They are taking steps to build bridges with the Sandtown community, to hire workers from that area. And the idea is that people will be taken care of, kept healthier in their neighborhoods rather than winding up in the hospital. The hospital's always delivered really good care once you were within their doors. What they didn't do is pay much attention when you were outside their doors. And so they're trying to do better. Part of the equation is getting more primary caregivers in these lower-income Baltimore neighborhoods, which is a challenge. There's a primary care shortage nationwide, and it's even more challenging to get family doctors to set up practice in these neighborhoods, but it's really something that's necessary.
You know, part of the cultural problem, I would think, in Baltimore particularly, would come from the historical reputation that Johns Hopkins has, particularly as a hospital that was known for maybe not being terribly progressive as far as African Americans were concerned. It was the place you went maybe to get sterilized or something. There are all kinds of myths and rumors, and some factually based, which make Johns Hopkins not a trusted member of the community.
Johns Hopkins, there's a lot of stories in African American folklore about doctors in general being distrusted providers, not just in Baltimore, but all over the country. And as you noted, there was some reason for the African American community not to trust the medical community. There were terrible things that happened decades ago. obviously, that doesn't take place anymore, but it's hard to dispel those myths. And it's just one reason why we found that there's a deep, deep divide of distrust between low-income African-American communities in Baltimore and these prestigious medical institutions. It's not just the old myths that contribute to that gap. Even now, people tell us that the hospitals don't listen to what they say. They're peremptory. They're haughty. They don't understand the instructions that they're supposed to adhere to for their care after they leave. The hospitals have a reputation for doing procedures, for operating. One gentleman told us if they're not amputating or operating, you know, they don't have anything to do. And the hospitals are trying to overcome that, and they're taking steps. It's, you know, it's far too early to see whether it's going to make a meaningful difference.
So how do you move the needle, and what time frame is there to note a significant outcome in life expectation and in public health in this neighborhood?
It'll probably take 5 years to see a meaningful difference, if there is a meaningful difference. You move the needle by moving resources out of the hospital facility and into the community. And whether that will require more resources than are now being devoted, or whether it can be done with the resources that are already there, also remains to be seen. You know, we spend incredible amounts of money on healthcare in this country, typically more than twice the average for the other developed nations with industrial economies like the United States. And what some people think is that we can take the resources that we already have and redeploy those to the community, save money for everybody, and include health. Other people think it'll take more money. It's too early.
Jay Hancock is a reporter with Kaiser Health News. He led the investigation in conjunction with students from the University of Maryland's Merrill College of Journalism. Jay, thanks.
Thanks for having me, John.